The previous owner of the house we bought in Florida had planted the grapefruit tree, and it looked like, well, more of a bush than anything else. So after the very first year, I told Wendy, well, we're not eating the fruit, and since we're not eating the fruit, I'm going to make it at least look like a tree. So I trimmed it up. I shaped it up. It looked like a tree. The next year, produced twice as much fruit of that rotten grapefruit. That's right. So, oh well. What do you do? How do you discover how to be happy? Who are you at your core? That's our theme. One of the great Christian storytellers of modern times was a Jesuit priest in India by the name of Anthony de Mello. And one of de Mello's parables is about an old woman who was in a coma, and she was slowly dying. As the woman lay on her sickbed, she had a sudden feeling that she had been taken up to heaven and was standing before the judgment seat of God. She could see nothing but clouds and darkness. But then, out of the billowing smoke, came a sonorous voice, "Who are you?" Not knowing what else to say, she turned to the answer she had her entire life, the one she used most. "I'm the wife of the mayor." "I did not ask you whose wife you are, but who you are." I'm the mother of four children," she offered. Again the answer came, "I did not ask you whose mother you are, but who you are." I'm a school teacher. "I did not ask your profession, but who you are." And so it went, the question repeated over and over again. But no matter what the woman replied, the answer was unacceptable before the judgment seat. Finally, she thought of another answer. "I'm a Christian," she said. But that, too, was unacceptable. "I did not ask what your religion is, but who you are." "I'm the one who went to church every Sunday and I helped the needy and the poor." "I did not ask what you did, but who you are." De Mello concludes his parable by observing that the woman evidently failed the examination in heaven, and she was sent back to earth. Soon afterward, she awakes from her coma and resumes her life. But this time, something's different. Something has changed about her. From that day forward, the old woman resolved to use what time she had to discover who she is. And that, the storyteller concludes, makes all the difference. So who are you, really? If you could strip away all those layers you have spent your entire life carefully building up, those labels, those titles, those definitions, what's left? What's the essential core of yourself that God sees? This is what happens when we are like trees planted by living streams of water. We discover who and whose we are. Now, Psalm 1 begins on a positive note. Happy are those. Some translations say, blessed are those. For today, I'm not interested in distinguishing between those two. Happy are those who do not follow the advice of the wicked. I don't know about you, but I think that's a pretty no-brainer. I mean, who wants to be on the side of the Wicked Witches Flying Monkey Squadron? Those guys scared me. Yet the advice of the wicked never arrives in such an easy to discern form, does it? In the real world, wickedness rarely clothes itself in ominous colors, hissing, "I'll get you, my pretty." No, that's not how it comes. It presents itself as attractive, appealing, comfortable. Today's wicked advice presents itself, especially in the hands of advertisers, as simply whatever everyone wants. It really pays to seek out the underlying message behind any of those appeals in advertising. Because if you ask me, most advertising boils down to just give us your money. Like the luxury car ad proclaiming, if money can't buy happiness, consider leasing it. I had the blessing of going to lunch this week with my predecessor, Pastor Len, and we went to an ice cream shop, of course, and in the ice cream shop had a sign. It said, money can't buy happiness, but it can buy ice cream. Buy ice cream. You know, I get what they're trying to do. I really do. It's just that all day long when we're bombarded with advice like that, it just has its effect. It's bad advice. It's setting us up for failure. Those subtle bits of advice can shape the way we think, can mold our desires and even our values. Caveat emptor, buyer beware. So when the psalmist says that our best chance for happiness is when we do not follow the advice of the wicked, let's be mindful of just what constitutes wicked advice these days. I don't think we can be happy if we follow the wicked. Happy are those who do not take the path that sinners tread. This is one step beyond listening to bad advice. It's actually getting up and following it. The Hebrew word for sinner used here by the psalmist doesn't refer to a person who's bad to the core. Literally, it means a person who just missed the mark, sort of like an archer who's aiming for the target, but the arrow shoots off into the woods. We don't have to look far to see plenty of people who have missed the mark these days. We might not have to look beyond the mirror. Folks are caught up in that rat race of material achievement. The starting pistol goes off, bam, and we take off running. To be happy, I believe we have to step back from that rat race and plant ourselves. And what of the seat of the scoffers? Scoffers. Few things are easier in life than mocking others. There are some who mock what we do in church, who see no value in worship, are quick to question the motives of those who seek to do good for others. Worldly wise, they avoid the church, they say, because, well, there's just too many fake Christians, you know, hypocrites in church. Although it's interesting to note that they don't stop using $20 bills because of counterfeits in the circulation. The scoffer's theme song is a catchy tune. Even the best of us may find ourselves unconsciously humming it. When everyone else is singing the praises of Sunday morning bike rides or shopping expeditions, do we hide the fact we're spending that time, those hours, in church? So the psalmist says, be like trees planted by streams of living water. That's how you figure out who's the greatest. Do you know what's the most important part of a tree? Ask any landscaper who transplants one, and you'll quickly find out it's the roots, the part we normally don't see. Landscapers take inordinate care to ensure that the root ball stays tightly packed and moist, that it gets the right kind of soil at the right depth. Now, all kinds of damage can happen in transit to the trunk, to the branches, to the leaves. But as long as the roots are alive and intact, there's hope for recovery and new growth. We're a lot like that. All kinds of damage may have happened to us on our journey in life, in our personal, professional, physical journeys. Things have happened. We've got the scars to prove it. But if we can plant ourselves by God's living streams, there is hope. And as Pastor Jim said this week in a memorial eulogy, hope is a powerful thing. Its roots are sunk deep into the best possible place, where there is a source that not only sustains, but allows us to flourish. Let me bring out my nerdy garden side a little and talk about a maple tree. 95% of maple trees that make it to their first birthday don't make it to their second, because it's hard for young saplings. Life is hard. 95% perish. The average tree seed doesn't travel far. Most maple seedlings take root less than 10 feet away from a trunk that supports the very branches from which the seed fell. But there's an amazing thing about maple trees, one reliable and fascinating act of generosity between a maple and its offspring. Each night, beneath the ground, the most precious resource of all, water, moves up the taproot of a mature tree and out towards the weak, such that saplings might experience another day. A mature maple tree gets most of its water through its taproot. Okay, that's the root that extends deep down, straight down. Mature maple trees then passively redistribute water taken from the depth up and out their shallow roots, the ones close to the surface, all night long. During the night, their shallow roots give out water. Smaller plants can then rely on that recycled water for more than half their needs. Now, the water's not all a sapling requires. The tree still has to do its part, but it must help. And saplings need all the help they can get, it just like us, so that 50 years from now, there still will be a maple tree defending the same plot of land. People around us are a lot like those saplings. Some may be unhappy, some may be struggling to grow. What can we give them as mature trees? If we know who we are and whose we are, if we are planted by streams of living water, God's unconditional love, if we're the ones helping others, if we're the ones making sure our welcome is sincere, generous, and extravagant, it might make the lives of those who are struggling around us a little easier. Now, I have to say that the truly happiest moments in my life have been when I've been helping others, when I've been forgetting about myself and helping others serve and helping others grow. I think that's what I strive to be at my core. Fred Rogers of Mr. Rogers fame is one of my favorite theologians, and I have a book of his quotes at my fingertips every day. A kind parishioner sent me this quote this week from Fred Rogers. It's our insides that make us who we are, that allow us to dream and wonder and feel for others. That's what's essential. That's what will always make the biggest difference in our world. So I ask, can we sink our taproot deep and then redistribute and share with others the precious life-giving resources we have been blessed to receive? We can if we are planted by God's living stream. And finally, James A. Harnish tells the story of the Christians who built the cathedral church in Seville, Spain. Before they began construction in 1401, they wrote a resolution, signed it as a statement of their dream and vision in building the church. The resolution reads, quote, Let us build here a church so great that when those who come after us, they will think us mad for ever having dreamed it." End quote. What kind of church are you and I willing to build here? How can we shape our church to reflect God's living streams? Our council has developed a rough draft of a mission statement to help us. The final draft will go before you in January for a vote. Our rough draft, we're trying to live it out this fall. A rough draft of that mission statement is sharing God's love, unconditional love, sharing God's unconditional love, justice, an extravagant welcome. You are invited to plant yourself here. Allow God to shape, prune you and me. And then let's build a church so great, so wonderful, so serving, so welcoming of God's children, as the Gospel of Mark puts it, that those who come after us, they're going to think we were mad to have ever dreamed it. Thanks be to God. Amen.